The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 16th of August, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. It's a Tuesday. That means it's World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Erin. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. Listen, I got to just do a little house touch on. First of all, I want to say happy belated birthday and happy birthday and happy in the coming days birthday to a whole bunch of Leos, right? Now, first of all, you have to do it like this because Leos think that they are the most special people on the planet. Maybe they are. Maybe they are. But I'm a Taurus and I stubbornly believe that that may not be the case. We love all of the Leos out there. And I want to say happy Earth Day to Taitu Heron, today to Terry Johnson, to Sakani Nash, Pa, the minister of works on people's nerves from the spot, and happy birthday to Jason Evans, one of the foundational members of Thoughtcatcher and the spot. Happy birthday. I also have to say happy belated birthday to Nat the farmer, Nat the Fox Hill farmer. Happy birthday. Make sure you get your crops in the ground for the winter grow season. Nat. If I miss your birthday, and I also have to say happy belated birthday to my cousin, Nikki Butler. Happy birthday, cousin. If I didn't get your birthday in here, let me tell you, I am sorry. Most of all, because that means I probably didn't get any cake either. That is sad news. Oh, boy. Listen, so I just have to say this because this morning was a very interesting morning. I don't know what's happening on the streets of New Providence, but I would like the police to come outside and take a look. Just come outside and take a look. Something may interest you. Something may pique your interest, right? Because I'm just saying, between where I left this morning, I'm not saying that I slept out. I'm just saying that I have to go visit my fruit trees. And getting to the station was growing. It was shocking and frustrating. First of all, I was about to enter Carmichael Road, right, from an intersection. And it's a good thing I looked four times, left, right, because this vehicle was just overtaking live on Carmichael for no real reason, you know, but just blind overtaking. And I'm glad that I just hesitated and paused. Then, as I was approaching Faith Avenue intersection, turn signal on as I'm entering the turn lane, this young lady just threw her car into the road in front of me and basically created a roadblock. I thought she's the police. Only thing that stopped me from running out, because I thought I did something, was that she was only 12. I mean, she could only been 12. She looked like a very, very young woman. And then as I was leaving the highway, the stadium highway exit, sort of coming onto University Drive right there, where Clarence A. Bain Building used to be, that's up there. Y'all ever thought that Clarence A. Bain Building would never be in that spot? Like they would take that down? Anyway, I want to say good morning to the BPL urgency crew, because wherever you were going, sir, it was obviously somebody told you where the file was about the fire in 2018, right? The investigation. Somebody told you where that was and you were going for it, right? The way you flew across that your red light in front of me suggests that maybe you shouldn't be a part of the team that's responsible for the nation's electricity grid and complex, right? Like, that's all I'm saying. That behavior like that suggests that we know the reason why PPL is constantly failing. Because it don't look like y'all making critical or rational decisions. Yeah. But that's not the best of it. The best of it is leaving the gas station, the Shell gas station, right next, almost next to the Guardian, across the road. A vehicle had slowed down almost to the point of stopping. And I imagine as an indication that I could come out and turn towards the Guardian. And as I was making my way out, a stuntman was dancing on his scooter, but overtaking blindly. Just overtook around the truck.
Whoa.
And I almost ate him. I'll be fair, my car is far bigger than the scooter. My car would have eaten him. It wouldn't have been my fault, but he would have gotten eaten nonetheless. His family and his children would be looking up in my face like I'm supposed to take care of him, but it would have been his fault, you know? And maybe the person in the van who it appeared was letting me out, maybe he wasn't letting me out because it turns out like he was deeply ensconced, is that the word? Or is that them things you put on the wall? Anyway, he was deeply rooted in his cell phone. I mean, he was so deep in his cell phone, it might as well have been his bed at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Isn't there like a $500 fine if you do that?
I think so. I thought it may have been a little more than that.
Yeah.
But there is a large fine.
I'm amazed by how many people on scooters are going around without their helmets.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine they would want to have that on if they came off their bike, right? But that's a simple thing to stop, right? I mean, I see that every day. That should be a police stop, right?
Yeah, it should be. But it's almost as if the police have decided if you want to kill yourself, then we're going to let you kill yourself. We do not have sufficient resources to enforce that. But this is a public safety issue. And just don't realize that they must wear helmets to protect themselves or the potential injury they could suffer. Mm-hmm. Just your bike could get nudged by a car. You could fall the wrong way, hit your head, and suffer irreparable brain damage, you know? There's just a recklessness. And what surprises me most is that people don't see the impact of that, the direct impact of that those actions and behavior, right, on the movement of goods, people, and services, on their own lives. The tremendous amount of stress that people are under every day. But I am surprised that people don't see the impact of behaviors like that and cultures like that across the board in other spheres. I'm stunned to the point where I'm wondering if the people who have a duty of care, the people who are obligated to provide oversight for these things, to enforce controls, I wonder if they've just given up.
See, when I lived in the UK, I have to say once or twice I didn't drive well, but you know what? I was picked up, and then they come down to you and they talk you to it or give you a point on your license or something, and then it makes you think and go back and not do it again. But Layla, my daughter, just learned how to drive, and she comes back, Daddy, you know, people crazy out on the road. She just learned, so she's a little bit terrified how people just pulling out and just.
You know, I know this is a conversation my mother don't ever want to have. I don't want my mother driving on these roads. It's one thing to think that okay, you're getting older, you may not be quick enough to manage the traffic. It's another, an accident may occur, and somebody's going to get out of their car and try and convince you an accident didn't happen. And then when you refuse to accept that, they're going to try and bully you back into your car. And when you refuse to accept that, they're going to attempt to lie to the police, pay them off, or just ignore the fact that they've gotten a summons, they've been requested to come to court, they've been given a ticket. And now we have seen instances where people have been attacked. In fact, and these are recent things, right? I talk in 10...
Like a road rage.
Right, but I talk about 10 years ago. I was driving my mother's vehicle and somebody bumped into the back of us in traffic. It was heavy enough to feel it. And then obviously once you know it's happened, you have to deal with it. The woman cussed me when I opened up my door and asked me why the expletive I getting out my car. Right? This is 10 years ago, behavior that wasn't captured. But now we see, you know, this story with your daughter is not the first instance of young people, people who are new to driving, expressing that there's something terribly wrong. I watched a couple of days ago, I watched a driving school vehicle exit the stadium on the road traffic department side. It approached a stop sign. Traffic is flowing steadily. And you know, the vehicle never came to a complete stop. They never brought the vehicle to a complete stop in front of the stop sign. And I know they're thinking that this is a skill. I don't understand why you're upset. But they assess the movement of traffic. And they maintained the speed as slow as they could go without coming to a complete directly into traffic. And I think they had a student in the car. But this is a driving school. Mm-hmm. The vehicle is wrapped in all of the information, all the logo, the contact information for the driving school. And you have driving instructors with students on the road teaching them to ignore these controls. And the only thing I could imagine is, I mean, maybe you're saying to them, listen, I could teach you the rules, or I could teach you how to not buck up and get where you're going. And I imagine, what type of country do we think we're running if we know this is happening and we're not doing anything about it? You know, I just want to say, in this moment, I need Bahamians to know you can't solve every problem with money. You can't protect yourself or isolate yourself from these issues, these crises, with money. It may appear that you're doing it for like a limited amount of time. It may seem eternal to you, but that's because your vision is limited. And you can't see the negative impact of your behavior or this behavior. And you certainly can't see how it directly impacts your own life. But we have reached crisis proportions. And it's a very large problem. See, I could appreciate the frustration of the police saying, listen, this is a cultural issue. Somebody has to cause Bahamians to commit, to decide that they are going to govern themselves, discipline themselves, and cause other people around them to be disciplined. But that can't be so, because the police second mandate is traffic enforcement. Every police officer is a traffic officer, has responsibility for traffic. So it can't be so.
So they must be trained, right, in traffic laws and stuff like that, right?
Right. Right. They must be. They're supposed to be.
Straightforward then, right?
Right. But it's obvious that they're not. They couldn't be. I refuse to believe that in the training the police officers are told that they are all traffic officers and that there are assessments and examinations in place to ensure that they have a full grasp of what the traffic controls are and their obligations. And then they go out on the road and just ignore them. I can't believe it.
Well, my only experience is I had two accidents. And each time the police officer came, he didn't have a notebook. So he had to borrow a piece of paper and a pen to write on, which I thought was kind of unusual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not recording it accurately, and it was like a little scribble with little bits and pieces and signatures and names on it. So I don't know how you could even decipher that. So... And that also happened the second time.
That happened to you twice?
Twice.
You know, I sit here smiling and saying, Mark, that happened to me once too, you know. What happened to you twice?
Paper, didn't have his book or whatever the book is that they have to write
the ticket
things
book,
in the ticket book, yeah.
I'm going to top your story. I see your story, I can raise you. But go on, finish it.
Yeah, no, it's... Anyways, so I'm looking for a little piece of paper, a pen in my car to give it to him, and then he carries off the little scrap of paper, and then you wonder what, you know, the next step is with that.
Right, right, what happens. But the day that the there was a little mini riot on the wharf with the Segway driver, with the woman tour operator on the Segway that day, I encountered a police officer that same day in town on Elizabeth Avenue. I subsequently spent 3 years in court trying to deal with that matter.
What?
Yeah. The officer didn't have a ticket book. He didn't have a radio. He didn't have his police identification number on, because apparently he didn't have a sweater either. And he didn't have his bicycle. He didn't have anything really but a commitment to policing Negroes on the plantation. And he stopped us for no real reason, took my driver's license, walked around the corner on his cell phone on a call with my driver's license. 3 years, and nothing ever happened. Police never showed up. And I think I was supposed to be satisfied that I didn't get ticketed.
Let it go.
Yeah. Just amazing. Just amazing. But I just want the world to know that I do not want police officers to be cold. Yes, he should wear a sweater, even if it's not the official police uniform sweater that allows for you to display your identification number on it. I want the world to know that police officers shouldn't be cold, though. And I agree with you all. Don't be cold. Wear whatever sweater you need to wear. Like, this is where we're at. This is where we're at. And so... I'm really hoping that the Bahamas Insurance Association and the industry itself and all affiliated actors will step in, being one of the most powerful industries, spaces, lobbying spaces. But let me put it to you like this. If you want culture to shift in your country, engage the insurance industry. Okay? You want to... cause behavioral shifts, you've got to engage the insurance industry. You want to see real shifts at a national level, you have to get the insurance industry on board. We're talking about behavioral shifts, right? Because they have the influence, they have the affluence, but they intersect everything they do, right? They're like, they're entwined in every space. So you want to see behavioral shifts around eating and food and consumption, engage the insurance industry.
And get them to lobby, is that what you're saying?
Well, get them...
Or advocate on behalf of what you're trying to achieve.
Get them to create policies and products that help to shift behavior, right? Everybody needs to have insurance to drive their car. Every single person needs to have insurance to drive their car. If you don't have insurance, you can't drive. So you're going to do whatever the insurance agent says you have to do to get the insurance. It's simple. You want health insurance? You have to do what the agents say is required to meet the criteria to get the insurance. It's as simple as that. You know, like in a long talk necessary, let's get the insurance industry on board in all of these discussions, because ultimately they pay out for bad behavior, right?
So, for example, if you're it should adequately reflect, you know, or create an incentive that for you to be healthy, you know, a non-smoker, doesn't that exist?
Absolutely. In fact,
that you're not, you know, morbidly obese,
right?
You know, because that has a health effect.
And obviously. I expect, at some point, I expect the insurance industry to sit down with the stakeholders of the merchant class, right, and the healthcare stakeholders and the state and say, listen, we're paying out too much money for people with comorbidities, with non-communicable diseases. We're paying out too much. We need a real policy shift to cause behavior to shift. Now,
So maybe we should get somebody from the insurance industry to come on the show.
I mean, maybe we don't
see how they approach this, because they have the best statistics, right? They have them going back donkey's years, right? 50 years, so they can track everything.
I mean, they just and so they continue to be one of the most valuable sectors in your country, in your community, and like you point out, for a multitude of reasons, we have to do something, because right now, money...
You know, in the UK, you can get a 15% discount on your insurance premium if you take an advanced driving test. So that could be an incentive, right?
This is...
Boom, I took it, got my 15%. That was, you know, I mean, it was about the same. It cost me the same for the driving test. But I tell you what, I really learned some really interesting, just some small things. They take you on a skid track. They teach you how to... you know, go on water and ice, things like that.
Right.
So something like that would be a pretty cool thing. I wouldn't mind having,
and listen, we need
15-20%.
I get this caller here, and then when we're done with this caller, we can get right back into that. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Hi, good morning.
And good morning to your psychic. I was waiting to call you that. Listen, you and you guys were talking about the traffic police and being pulled over. Mm-hmm. I wanted to call in and up you guys by one.
Okay.
I do measuring. My one up is I got a ticket. My ticket gave me a payment date of a weekend, which was a Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me an appearance date in court of a holiday.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that tops mine. Because my ticket was issued, I think, on the day of, but the offense... No, the offense took place on the day of, but the ticket was issued 2 months before.
Oh, wow.
But I like yours.
My apparently.
Yeah.
And my payment date was a Sunday.
Right. Ain't nobody coming to work on a Sunday.
I guess the speed cop didn't know that.
Yeah. And, you know, we could be easy here. How you say speed cop, right? They're on a motorbike. They're moving through traffic all the time. You know, they don't...
That was who pulled me over, a speed cop. Not a regular police car, a cop on a motorbike, a female at that.
Oh, yeah. But listen, you know, we give them a buy and say, you wearing that helmet all day and it's hot, and they have on 18 pounds of clothes every day.
But they're impressive. If you see them driving, oh, my God, they're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I watch them. I'm in awe of them.
They're well-trained.
I mean, superly well-trained.
On the bike, they know how to control it. And that's another thing that they need to teach us.
Right.
Right? Thank you very much for calling in. You are the winner so far. You are the winner so far. I got another text here that says, well, man, Aaron, you sure it ain't you? Because you just have too many traffic incidents. But seriously, I don't feel the AG office working on legislation. That's the same law from the start. I'd like to know who exactly working on it. The changes to our laws is being influenced by international organizations. Well, I think that there's certainly not sufficient public consultation. And public consultation isn't just a town meeting where you have 45 minutes of protocol and 15 minutes of questions. Right, and no answers. That's not public consultation. Public consultation isn't sending out a document 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month before you're going to table it or before you're actually going to vote on it. That's not public consultation. Public consultation is a two-way mechanism where information flows to the state and from the state, then it flows back. We work on it, then we send it back. Stakeholders like CSOs, have a public discussion. You have to, it's the same conversation with the referendum. We do not know what public consultation looks like or how it operates.
I think we tend to, you know, just from my experience with Civil Society Bahamas, the government, like your caller says, you know, legislation comes or a push comes from overseas, and the AG office suddenly goes, oh, geez, we have to get this done by a certain amount of time, and there is also a clause in there for public consultation. And so often the time is not enough to, given due to the planning, not enough to have a really authentic, effective, you know, consultation. It's really just something that they can tick and then go back to the sponsors and say this, you know, for the FATF or whoever is driving the legislation that we have done that task and we're, you know, so... you can pat us on the back. But I don't think just there is a real intention, or a government not really doesn't really want to.
Well, I tell you what, you could see it, right? Just like how you said it.
They don't really. It's more of a pain, right?
Right. It's too difficult. It's too difficult to get the information out of these people.
And then what do you do with it? And you have to have some kind of a process or some kind of SOP for what your protocol for what you do with that, and how that then goes into the report. It's a lot of work.
I mean, just having to engage with the citizens makes governance so much harder, Mark.
But there are laws that says that that the government has to engage civil society on everything it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
The revised Treaty of the Changuru, I forget that.
CARICOM Treaty.
Yeah, the CARICOM Treaty.
Yeah.
And but they don't really, because it is, they don't see it, well, I don't think they see it as a real benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's more like a break on what they want to do.
Yeah.
And but consultation can be very useful, because you know what the top down approach, which is one size fits all, that it's supposed to fit, you know, Canada, but it's all supposed to fit us. It just doesn't work.
No,
you know, and I think people are realizing that it just doesn't work. It has to have a local context, and the only way you get that local context is through consultation, because no matter how smart those MPs, the committees they set up to, you know, to monitor these things, they don't really have that breadth to really know what the... Let's face it, a lot of middle class, live in middle class neighborhoods, they don't really know what's going on.
No.
In over the hill, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like every time I drive over, I'm looking around, seeing what's going on. But we're kind of disengaged from it, and the political class is to some extent disengaged from that
the lived experiences of other people. Yeah,
you know, we don't even have heat maps, because, you know, you go to parts of the states, they actually have heat maps of the local areas, so where you can see where the issues are, all the issues, you know, so health, you know, poverty, and so you can look at a map and say, okay, that area, that, you know, we have a lot of gender problems there, but the nonprofit that's dealing with it is like 10 miles away. It's not even in the community dealing, or childhood literacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not actually right there on the spot. So we're missing a lot of that data.
Right. And, you know, and as you were speaking, I thought, you know, okay, so we have the office of the data commissioner, right? Mm-hmm. The information commissioner being established.
It's a good thing.
Right. Yep. It is a good thing. And hopefully, though, it has mechanisms in it to expand our presumptions about information management, right? Because I hope that what doesn't happen is that not office, like the information commissioner, the data commissioner, that determines what information, facilitates access to information, right? I hope that the civil service doesn't decide that, look here, all information have to go through this process. If you want information and it ain't on that board out there, miss, you gotta go to the data commissioner, right? And I'm hoping that it expands our sense of what access to government information or state information is versus restricts it, right? And polices it. I hope it's a system that's supposed to manage, you know, and not police.
Yeah, and encourage the publication of data as well in some timely manner, because a lot of the ministries work in silos, and there seems to be this culture of not sharing data, which is a real shame, because, you know, social services, you know, there's a lot of overlaps in that data.
Intersectionalities.
Exactly. And it's hard, you know, when I'm researching, writing grants, it's hard to get data in the Bahamas. You know, if you try and do something on agriculture, food security, it's hard. The data is 2013 or 2000, you know, it's 10 years old and things have moved on. And when you ring the ministries, you just get, people don't know where the data is. You know,
right. And that's it right there. They don't know where it is.
Well, I tell you what, call NEMA and ask for their national disaster plan and see if you get it. Give them a call tomorrow and see if that's something that's readily available on a website or something that you can get. And these things should be easily available, and we shouldn't have to dig for them if we want, you know,
right,
like local community action plan.
Seniors in high school, freshmen at UB should be able to access information mm-hmm. like this and show up to class one day and say, look here, lecturer, look here, look here, look here, I'm tired of doing this. Can we create strategies to mitigate or to improve this? This is real, right? Like, that's how you create an environment to inspire, to excite, to drive the best out of your people. Talking about the best out of your people, Mark, right before we go to the break, producer, I got a very, very important text here, and I have to read it. First of all, it says, Miss Erin, Leo people are the best. Producer, are you a Leo? No, well, they can't be. The producer ain't a Leo, and I ain't a Leo. Y'all could be among the best. However, another text came in and said, listen, we need a happy birthday shout out to Warren McCartney today from a fellow Leo. Oh. So we're going to put them up at the top again, because Warren McCartney, he don't share peanuts. He don't share roast peanuts, but he's a good, good guy. And for that, we love him. I'm going to say happy birthday to Warren McCartney. I hope your birthday is today, Warren McCartney. I hope these people ain't teasing me, because I going to go play that number. I going to go play that number right to BPL. Right to BPL to play that number. On my bill. Producer, can we go to a break, please? When we come back from the break, guys, we're going to read some more of these texts. And then there's some news. Right to free period products becomes law in Scotland. Salman Rushdie stabbed. And Kenya's deputy president, Ruto, is declared the election winner. You're on the clock with Erin Green and Mark Palmer. You'll be right back.
We know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Do something else, boy.
Who this is? Tamika?
You don't even remember my name?
Wildred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning a trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine, because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you gotta get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding none under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Oh, did I eat up all the food? Did I drink down all the rum sweet? We can scream it dance all night long to the sound of the ancient man. Now you done blowed your candle, you done look on all your gifts. We done sing a happy birthday, and you done made a birthday wish.
Good morning and welcome back. No yawning this morning. We got birthday gifts to put together. I just saying, I know Mr. McCartney like peanuts. He like roasted peanuts. And Dex said, it says, hi, Ms. Green. I think a solution to our traffic problem is to have the police train traffic police that would only deal with traffic tickets and traffic matters. This would help police the streets and help create employment. This I'm thinking as well, right? Like every problem is an opportunity. And this is one of those. Community officers, you know, wider officers, and it, the effect, the impact could be far wider than just traffic management, right? But I see, Mark, we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there?
Morning, Aaron. Yeah.
Morning. How are you?
I noticed you're talking about community policing this morning. I'm glad you have that topic.
Yes, ma'am.
Right now, I'm in a community where we're having lots of issues with flooding.
Okay.
And I noticed I've been living here 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the rain and hurricanes we've ever had, until the last rain we had a couple of months ago,
oh, right.
A gentleman next to me, behind me, purchased a piece of property. I live right on a pond, and I've never had flooding.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman, in his wisdom, purchased a piece of property behind me, filled in the property, even filled in some of the wetland. When he was filling in, I spoke with him. I said, sir, you're filling in this wetland. We're going to have issues. This was before the rain came a few months ago. And so said, so then I have 3 inches of water in my house. 30 years, I never had any water in my house.
You documented with the pictures?
Right now, I am on his property. I'm waiting for the policeman because he has more fill. Because when I spoke to him a few weeks ago, he said he's putting more fill there. And now he has more fill. He has about 10 loads of fill to put on this small piece of property again.
Okay, here's...
And he's trying to fill in more of the rest.
I got you. Here's what to do.
I need a reporter down here because it's not... my car, he already locked his gate with me on this piece of land, and I'm waiting for the police to come.
Okay, listen, we're not going to talk about this on air anymore, ma'am. What you're going to do is give your number to the producer. I will see if there is a reporter available.
Thank you.
Here's the next thing. You need to go online and look for the DEPP, Environmental Planning and Protection app, right? And in that app, there should be instructions on how to file a grievance, how to file a complaint, how to upload the images that you would have documented of the instance. Then I would say call the Ministry of Environment and Natural Resources and seek instructions from that point, right? There may be a contact number on the DEPP web app, right? That like the website that will give you contact information for assistance with filling out the forms, the correct questions to ask, having the right information, where to submit it, who's the next person to go to, is there an environmental officer, right? Because the person who is building or constructing or renovating the property should have requested and received permissions to do certain things on the land. If there's a pond nearby, certainly an environmental impact assessment or a similar type of assessment must have been completed before they could go through with those actions. Mark, if you give me a second, we have to be very, very careful people how we engage the public media, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some instances, getting information out via the radio or public space is great to get it out there quickly, make people aware of it. But there's a very thin line right there because you may jeopardize the chance of justice. You may jeopardize your action. You may cause legal problems for yourself or for the other people. When we're talking about cases that are before the court, we risk jeopardizing justice. What we say may be fine, but it gives an opportunity to raise concern in the case. right? And these are the things. We talk about the balance of rights and responsibilities. You have the freedom of speech, but you have a responsibility to ensure that you don't negatively impact other people around you. And so to that person, I want to say thank you for calling and sharing, but let's be careful what we say on public airwaves.
How do you get justice, though, if you know, you go through the process and you go to the Department of Environment, you even say you go even see the minister, because I know this happened to a friend of mine, you know, with land that was being acquired by eminent domain, and he just never got any, you know, each administration said, in fact, when he went to them, it got worse.
Now, was his land acquired, or was he negatively impacted by land that was acquired and the construction of land that was acquired?
So what was happening was that land was being taken, chipped off the edges of his property. And it's been going on for 10 years. And apparently the person, so I'm not sure why they didn't stop it and look into it. They wouldn't have, but he's just never found any justice. And he's tried everything. I think at one point he went to do a hunger strike.
For real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Terry Miller and Bash, you know.
Yeah, land there.
The land there. And I know that it's in the media, so, you know, we know what's happened. But there didn't seem to be any resolution, or certainly a few months ago there hadn't been a resolution. It's been going on for years. And I know people who, you know, environment, getting justice and environmental issues seems to be very tough. It seems to be hard because people back off, or the regulatory bodies back off.
The enforcing bodies don't enforce.
Yeah, and it has to do with, you know, I think that, you know, politically connected persons or people who...
Members of the political class.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be tough to get anything to go your way if you're in that situation. It just seems so unfair, right? And I hope this doesn't happen to this lady, that she's able to. Because I would imagine if you fill in wetlands, that's not a good thing.
Oh, that's a horrible thing. But listen, I'm going to go to this call. Caller, you stay right there. I come in right now. Such an important point that you make. A thing that I've been thinking about is do we need to take the portfolio of Family Island Affairs out of the Ministry of Agriculture and make it a standalone ministry that can do far more? Because there seems to be a government policy of centralization, pulling people to the center, but you got to occupy land to own it. On this plantation, you got to occupy to own it. Let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron Green. How are you doing? Good morning to your co-host.
Good morning. How you doing?
Before I get to my point, I say to that lady that I have similar problems where I had to act in my area, call the director in that department, and explain to him. They ain't doing nothing, like you said, call the reporters out there.
Yeah.
Because I had a similar problem in the environment, and he promised me during that time he would dealt with it, and he did dealt with it.
I got you.
So, yeah, but my main point is the legislation of women passing on a citizenship. I think it would do a disfavor to vehement women if they have to go to a legislation. It should go to a constitution. It would be, to me, unbalanced, discriminated, if the men own it constitutional and the woman is not. You know, I mean, woman should, I mean, I'm right, woman and being a woman in majority is not standing for this. I surprise educated woman, you mentioned COB. I surprise educated woman, especially COB, is not leading the way. I surprised they're not telling their MP, I don't want it legislated. I want it constitutional. I want it to go to a referendum. You see what I'm saying? And Aaron Green, I expect you to say the same thing too.
You tune in. Anyway, we could start it now. Let me take this next call, and then I'm going to respond to that, eh? Let me take this next call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. I'm sorry, we miss you, caller. Please call back. Please call back. So, Mark, this is something I wanted to get into in the second hour, this sort of referendum discussion. Pumpkin Eater, I want you to know that I on it. We can talk about this. I really wanted to talk about this because I am one of those women. No, I'm not one of those women. I had a distinct and separate campaign where I advocated for a no vote for Bill Number 4 in particular. Spoken about it extensively, although people tend not to listen when I speak about it. But I'm going to tell you why. Because the government added a proviso to Bill Number 4 at the last minute that had a great impact or effect on the entire exercise. Right? And mm-hmm. it required a, as far as I'm concerned, it required a no vote. Right? They wanted to, the proviso said we're going to define sex as male or female only. And there's a couple problems with that. Like a couple people allege or state that the proviso was added to circumvent the ban, the temporary ban on same-sex marriage. Seems, oh, well, you know, someone like Erin could just go and have her sex changed to male, and then she could go and marry, you know, legally changed to male, and she could go marry a woman. So we're going to define sex as male or female only. But part of the problem with that is that it
so the sex at birth.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They wanted to go before birth, but then they realized sex at birth. But they amended that because putting sex at birth would suggest that you didn't exist before you left the birth canal. Right. So they amended that because of what they felt would be the impact on abortion legislation, right? Mm-hmm. But what they should have said was sex being defined as biological assignment and not male or female, right? Sex defined as biological assignment means that we're not talking about sexual orientation, sex. We're talking about your biological assignment. Sex is defined as biological assignment in this amendment. The second reason was that we were attempting to invisibilize intersex, transgender, and gender nonconforming people in the law. We're trying to invisibilize them, right? Without acknowledging or recognizing that there are studies. One particular study from a World Health Organization that said that the 1990 report indicated that the Bahamas had the third highest prevalence of a condition that resulted in intersex births. Why are you going to have a legal exercise invisibilizing intersex people without acknowledging the science around intersex birth and the incidence of intersex births in your country? In fact, why are you going to have a vote to invisibilize these people without telling the people that's what you're doing at a time when other countries are expanding conversations and legal procedures to acknowledge and include intersex people? Right? And so I thought that to do that without clearly explaining to the Bahamian people what they were voting for was a problem, and I couldn't support it. But also,
I love when the government says they're going to educate you in a referendum, they educate you on the bit they want to succeed, and that's
right.
it.
Right?
So you get one side, right? You get one side. You don't really have informed consent.
And I spend a lot of...
We never get it. Right. We never get it in this country on everything, whether it's a medical intervention. We just get the one side story of it.
Right.
We don't get the full picture, and I think that's a real problem.
Right, and it doesn't reach the standard of full consultation.
Like, when they legalized the gaming industry, it was the same thing. You know, the government at that time said we're going to educate you on this,
and
but
it was call coming right now. But then the actual provision said, do you want to regulate web shop gaming? Not legalize. It said, do you want to regulate it? It did not use the word legalize. And then they had the audacity to come back and say, no, legalize and regulate mean the same thing.
Yeah. And they knew exactly what they were trying to do.
Education. Anyway, let's go to this caller. Right. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
No, you just made the right point, what I was trying to say. Because if that means if you legalize or something, then you want to put the limitations or whatever you want on it. But I want to say 2 days, not to get off your topic, not too much. But let me, now don't take, Ms. Green, don't take me, I ain't trying to be facetious on that. I just want to understand.
Yeah, man.
You know, like how when, I don't even know how to say it, but I don't want to offend nobody. Like, say, if you see two women, right,
mm-hmm.
and they gay, and then one, like, more like a man.
Masculine person. Presenting. You know, like butch or masculine presenting.
Right.
Yeah.
I always just wonder, what's the purpose in that or why? Because if you you liken somebody who like a man, well, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't just choose a man or not. Like,
I got you. Right. Why do women who say that they like women and not men, why are they in relationships with women?
Oh, right. And it's carry on like a man. And before you answer that, then, because I know that. The lady who was talking about the property and all that stuff, just not. I don't know why, like, if you get a permit to build or whatever, all those should be in your stipulation when they grant you your permit. Like, what you could do, how much you could fill up, and if you fill in any property, you got to make a trench or whatever so it don't impede on other people's property.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really got to start doing things properly in this country.
Yes.
But once again, good show, man. Y'all have a good day.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Okay, so watch this. It's like, we call this, there's this thing called like heteronormative, right? It's like the behavior of straight people. That's what is.
If you'd like to make.
Like we consider that normal. A lot of people just consider that normal, mm-hmm. right? Like that's how straight people live. That's how you're supposed to live. And so sometimes gay people, like we grow up with that. We grow up in households typically with straight parents. We grow up around straight people, right? And we just absorb, we socialize into this behavior, right? Same thing with men. Not all men are the same. They don't like the same thing, way about everything. They don't dress the same. They don't like the same women. Some men don't even like women. But men in the Bahamas typically grow up like the same way. Like you got two sets of men here. You got men who is wear coat suit and you got men who is wear linen suit. Right? And they just like, you just socialize where you come from. That's how it works. Because you sort of socialize that mm-hmm. way. But guess what? Gay men could want to wear a coat suit or linen suit, right? Straight men could wear one. Mm-hmm. But sort of socialized into that space. Anyway, we're going to go. Well, this is the end of On the Clock and our World News segment with Mark Palmer. I'm sitting in today for Mr. Cecil Newry and Guardian Radio AM. And we're going to get to the rest of these texts and some calls and some new topics. And then back into some of these old topics. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.